Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I am back with a third season. And wow, so much has changed since season two. Mainly in that I've been on my own journey through pregnancy and have joined this crazy, incredible club of motherhood. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Pip, a practicing NHS midwife and enthusiast of all things women's wellness. I have a somewhat relentless passion for ensuring women are empowered with real, honest, and reliable information and support throughout their pregnancy. Because my goodness, pregnancy is such a powerful time in a woman's life that is often miraculous and challenging in equal measures. Over the upcoming weekly episodes, I am joined by many leading experts to bring you the evidence-based information and top tips to navigating your pregnancy and motherhood journey that you need to hear. Needless to say, I had my notebook at hand when recording this season, and I would recommend the same for you too. I hope you're ready for the giggles, knowledge bombs, and empowering chats to commence. But before I get quizzing our guests on this season, I have some questions for you. Have you found yourself with unanswered pregnancy questions? Have you been guilty of trying to navigate the rabbit warren of inaccurate information on the internet? Do you feel that extra support and guidance would be useful to you? If you answered yes to any of these, then fear not. My exclusive Your Pregnancy Journey course is for you. Spaces are limited, so if expert guidance through each stage of your pregnancy and birth preparation, and a community support group with 24 access to asking questions sounds like it's for you, then head over to www.midwifepip.com now to check it out. And I look forward to getting to know you better and ensuring your pregnancy journey is the most empowering and positive it can be. You'll also find information all about my antenatal course options on my website. And any questions about choosing the right course for you, then please get in touch via the contact page. And I'll be there to help you navigate the right choice. We spend so much time planning for pregnancy, researching birth, and focusing on growing the healthiest baby, analysing all our decisions to ensure we're doing what is perceived as best for our babies. And throughout motherhood, we continue to focus our energies on our little ones, ensuring they have all they need to thrive. But who is focusing on the mum? This brand new person who is born when we birth our first child, and a person who needs equal care measures. This is where postpartum nutrition is so often neglected, considered perhaps as an afterthought or buried at the bottom of the postpartum priorities pile. But my goodness, we need to unbury it and hold it in a much higher regard. Your body has been devoted to growing, nurturing, and birthing a whole new life. It's undergoing a roller coaster of physiological and physical change. It has a whole journey of recovery to embark on, And postpartum nutrition really is our friend on this ride. On this week's episode, I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Harriet Holm, a registered nutritionist and former experienced paediatrician. After studying at Cambridge University, Harriet worked in the NHS for over a decade before focusing on nutrition. She has a PhD in genetics and is a lecturer in nutrition. Harriet's focus is science-backed nutrition, and she is passionate about sharing credible information to empower people to eat for their long-term health. Her unique skill set of medical, scientific, and nutritional qualifications enables Harriet to provide personalized, expert nutrition advice. So we are in the best possible hands for today's chat. Harriet has also authored two fantastic books, Eating During Pregnancy and Postpartum Nutrition, and An Expert's Guide to Eating After a Baby. Written to support mums-to-be and new mums, both books are linked in the episode description for you to check out. Harriet is also the founder of the Eating for Health podcast, which is regularly in the top five UK nutrition podcasts. You can also find these linked in the description. But today I'm really grateful that Harriet has swapped seats and given up some time to share her wisdom with us. So welcome, Harriet, and thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to come on and talk with you today.
Oh, thanks, Harriet. It's brilliant to have you and for using up some of your very precious time. So we are very, very grateful. I just wonder, first of all, Harriet, if we could look at what kind of interested you in going into a career in nutrition, because you were a paediatric doctor studying nutrition. Is that right?
Yes, I was actually specialising in paediatric oncology. So it's in some ways quite different from nutrition. It's been an interesting journey, I think. I wouldn't have predicted that where I was going to end up, but I still guess may end up somewhere slightly different as it is, but I think it's all sort of come together. So my interest in medicine, my interest in people, my interest in problem solving, and then specializing in pediatric oncology. Nutrition has obviously been sort of part of pediatrics, part of pediatric oncology. And then when I did my PhD in the laboratory, I really enjoyed research really and understanding the science more, and that gave me a foundation for understanding more about cellular models and animal models, and then being able to piece really the information together a bit better, that I can understand the science behind something and then how it translates into medicine. And then I guess it was really during my PhD and understanding more about genetics that I was interested in the microbiome and how important that is for long-term health. And that's what interested me in nutrition a bit more. And then I returned to medicine and realized that after my time out doing my PhD, it wasn't for me anymore. And I have a young family, and I decided to step out and do nutrition instead. So I became a registered nutritionist. As you said, I now lecture in nutrition and I have my own business, and I'm really passionate about educating people and sharing that knowledge in a way that I think is not sensationalized. It's not for quick fixes. It's about long-term evidence-based nutrition and health, and how important that is together.
Yeah, oh, that's so true. So actually, although we kind of, I guess initially I kind of thought of those two roles that you've had being quite different, actually they're super interlinked, aren't they? And that whole kind of continuum of pregnancy nutrition into affecting the baby and the newborn, and then childhood nutrition and obviously postpartum nutrition, actually are all really interlinked, aren't they? I think sometimes perhaps we forget that.
Yeah, I think they're really interlinked. And I think the more we know and the more we understand about things like the microbiota, the more we understand how so many things are linked, even in that people's response to chemotherapy is actually partly dependent on your gut bugs. So I think as we understand nutrition more, as we understand the role of the microbiota, we're sort of understanding more and more how things are linked. And while no food is going to cure a disease, certainly it can decrease your long-term risk of disease. And I think for me, it's that interplay between nutrition and long-term health, which I find most interesting. And especially, you know, that's sort of no more important in pregnancy and also, you know, a baby creating a new life and understanding how the microbiota is formed and what impact that has on long-term health. So I think it's really interlinked, actually.
That's amazing. So actually, nutrition is so much more powerful than kind of getting your five a day and things like that we often hear, isn't it? So much more to it. So why do you think, Harriet, that we neglect our postpartum nutrition so much? Because I know often, certainly the mums I've worked with, the friends and family that I've had that have had new little babies, it really is, you know, bottom of the pile. They're kind of right, baby's all fed and sleeping. What can I quickly grab? And often that is the kind of convenience foods that typically we would have tried to maybe steer clear of, but in the postpartum kind of sneak in a little bit more.
I think it's a number of reasons. I think first of all, having a baby is a massive change. It's a massive paradigm shift. Your body's been through, you know, huge physiological processes, as you said, during pregnancy and then labor or a cesarean section. And your body needs time to heal. You're tired. You've suddenly got this baby who you have to feed. And your baby is your priority then. Your priorities change. And so it's all about looking after your baby. And even, you know, even as a pediatrician, I thought that I'd be maybe more relaxed about having a new baby than I was. I thought, you know, I've seen it all before. I've seen sick babies and well babies. I know what to look for. I know what I'm doing. But it's very different being a mother. It's very different being on call 24/7. There's no annual leave. And that you suddenly have this new baby to look after. And it is scary, I think. I think most people would say the same. You suddenly think, oh my goodness, I'm responsible for this new life. So it's really understandable that your baby is your priority. And especially if you've already had a baby and you've got a toddler running around, and it's not your first baby, you've then got the toddler during the day, the baby all night trying to feed it, juggling. So I think, you know, your needs just fall to the bottom of the pile. And I don't think that's just about nutrition. I think that's probably most things. And I think that happens for quite some time. And that's why mums are generally, you know, worn ragged and trying to find that me time and trying to work out how to fit that in. So, you know, certainly I didn't find it easy. I don't think that most people do, and I think it's really understandable. And then on top of that, people think, oh well, if I'm breastfeeding, you know, all the calories will just fall off, so I don't need to worry, I can, you know, it's maternity, you know, I'm on maternity leave, and maternity leave equals cake. So I think it's a combination of, you know, I've just had a baby, like, just, you know, I've pushed a baby out, or I've had an operation, I'm recovering, I need cake. And or you've been up all night and you're absolutely exhausted, and that cortisol, that stress hormone, kicks in and helps, you know, well, increases your likelihood that you're going to want carbohydrates and high fat, high sugar foods, because you're feeling stressed and exhausted. So it's all very normal and very predictable. But I think it's about then just trying to make those small changes to protect your long-term health.
Yeah, definitely. Harry, I'm about to start my maternity leave in a few weeks. Are you telling me I can't just sit and eat cake?
Well, I must say I was very disappointed in my first maternity leave, because I had to go on a gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free diet. So I had no cake, I'd had hyperemesis all the way through. So it was, you know, cake would have been a delight. But yes, I hope you get your cake. I hope you get to eat it.
I'm sure some cake will feature, for sure. So we kind of know that it is definitely a challenge of the postpartum, isn't it? Kind of really trying to think about our nutrition. But why is it really important? Because hopefully by us kind of understanding the benefits we can reap from it, we might be able to kind of notch up that priority list a little bit, or at least try and kind of focus on it, perhaps more than it being a complete last resort, empty calories.
Sure. So I think we all recognise the benefits of a healthy diet, you know, so the fundamentals of that. And how actually having 30 grams of fibre can reduce your long-term risk of bowel cancer. Eating fruit and vegetables have got all those antioxidants, the fibre, the prebiotics that feed your gut and your gut bugs, so it's microbiota, and how important they are for things like cholesterol and cardiovascular disease and long-term health and diabetes. So on top of those sort of fundamental things about having your fruit and vegetables, eating the fiber, eating whole grains instead of refined carbohydrates, eating fermented food to help replenish those gut bugs, and trying to avoid things like trans fats in commercially baked goods, and sugary drinks like fizzy drinks, and sweeteners, which aren't great for your gut health. So on top of doing all that, you do actually need some extra micronutrients. And those are calcium, selenium, and iodine. And you need those more if you're breastfeeding. And that's not to help your milk supply or to help your baby. That's to help you and your long-term health. So you should be having about 1,250 milligrams of calcium a day and 200 micrograms of iodine and 60 to 70 micrograms of selenium. And I think that most women don't know that. I didn't as a doctor when I had my first child. And so I think it's about understanding that your needs do increase quite dramatically, particularly for the calcium, and how to get that. So I've got on my website, they're completely free to download, a little checklist with like an average portion size. How much calcium there is in dairy, or salmon with bones in, so like tinned salmon, eating bones has got lots of calcium in, just so that you know, that's what 1,250 milligrams looks like. And I certainly wouldn't want anyone to weigh food, but I think it's really useful knowledge to know like, all right, a portion of this equals, you know, half of my calcium. And so that you're empowered then to look after your own health during breastfeeding, and know how to get selenium. You know, it's just a couple of Brazil nuts a day, or, you know, some other items, but about how to get it, and so that you know that you're meeting those micronutrient needs.
Oh, that sounds really helpful, because otherwise when we talk about numerical values, let's face it, to most of us that means nothing. You know, that number doesn't mean equate to anything to me, but actually having that visual of this much food contains this, you can then quite easily work out how you can boost that in your diet. And then absolutely, it might just be those little small changes. So it's not this massive overhaul, time consuming, troublesome thing we might think it might be. It might just be having that bit of extra, like you say, a couple of Brazil nuts. So I'll make sure that's also linked, because I think that'll be super helpful in the description for mums that are listening, to just think about those small little tweaks that we can make that actually will be really, really beneficial.
Absolutely. And it is small tweaks like that, just knowing, I need an extra portion of protein or an extra portion of calcium, you know, really will make a difference, and are really just small tweaks and easy to add into, you know, to your diet, but will help your long-term health. So I think it's really hard as well for people to know in quantities, which is why I've done it, you know, a little tiny checklist, no weighing, it's nothing complicated, it's just, you know, to help you.
Brilliant. That sounds exactly what we need. We like straightforward in the postnatal, especially when you're sleep deprived.
Absolutely. I'm more than aware of that. Yeah, no, it's tough. And also just to add, I think that women that are on an exclusion diet, it's really tough for those women. And so, for example, if your baby has cow's milk protein allergy, which mine did, you know, it's really great. There are loads of different dairy-free plant-based milks, or you might be vegan, or you might, you know, drink them because you like them, or you think it's better for the planet. You know, there are lots of reasons why people drink plant-based milks these days. But just to highlight that, don't choose an organic plant-based milk, because they're not fortified. And so it's only the non-organic milks that have got the calcium, and some of them have also got iodine in, which is really great. So like Oatly's got iodine, M&S has got iodine. So check that when you're having your plant-based milk, it has got that iodine in it as well as the calcium.
Oh, that's really interesting, actually, especially because I imagine a lot of mums in the postpartum will think, well, if I go for the organic, then that must be better from a nutritional perspective. But actually, we need to be reading those labels a little bit closer.
Yes, absolutely.
Amazing. So you mentioned there, Harriet, some of the vital micronutrients that we need to be kind of focusing on in the postpartum. Are there any other kind of key nutrients that we need to kind of consider in our recovery and obviously for feeding our babies?
So some women will have lost some blood, and so they might have less iron, and you'll either be given an iron supplement, or some women will be having have a blood transfusion. But for most women, they don't need iron supplements, and you can just eat iron rich items in your diet. There are lots of both plant-based, so that's non-heme iron, and also heme iron, so that's from meat, red meat. And if you're going for the plant-based non-heme iron, try and have that with some vitamin C at the same time, because it increases the bioavailability. So have some lemon juice or have some blueberries for pudding or something like that. And also try to avoid drinking things with caffeine, so tea and coffee, within 2 hours of eating, because that reduces the bioabsorption as well.
Oh, that is a good tip. And I think iron's one of those things that women will quite often rightly say try and optimize in pregnancy to try to, boost their postpartum recovery, because we know that our bodies are expected to lose some blood and therefore some iron stores following birth. We often hear, so in the postpartum or in a breastfeeding mum specifically, that we know that breastfeeding does utilise more energy even than perhaps pregnancy itself. And often we hear the number sort of 300 calories as being kind of an expected energy expenditure of a breastfeeding mum. How can we look at that in terms of ensuring we supplement those calories? Because obviously we don't want to be allowing our bodies to run into a deficit when we're trying to produce milk and recover from birth. And have you got any tips to kind of supplementing that in a nice healthy way?
So I think that calories are a really broad brushstroke, and I'd actually try to sort of think of more about avoiding using them, in that they're sort of so, I guess, it's such a blunt tool for thinking about things, and your body is so much more complicated than just calories. So I'll just give you an example. So say, for example, you ate sweet corn. Well, we all know that if you eat sort of corn on the cob, most of it's just going to come out in the toilet. And so your calorie input from that is very minimal. But if you grind up sweet corn and eat it, say, as a tortilla or something, then you're going to absorb the calories a lot more. And how people define a calorie is the amount of energy that it takes when you burn a food to heat a specific volume of water. Well, we're not burning food inside our bodies, we're metabolizing it, everyone's slightly different, and our energy needs are also, you know, different depending on our physical activity and our metabolism and our metabolic rate. So I think while it's sort of useful at a population level to think our needs might be a bit more during breastfeeding and pregnancy, we have really complex mechanisms within our bodies of hunger hormones and appetite hormones that will regulate how much we actually need. And I think it's better just to eat when you're hungry, eat when you're so physically hungry, when you feel physically hungry, that not try to avoid eating just because what's called sort of emotional hunger. So emotional hunger is when the hunger comes on really quickly, only something specific like a chocolate biscuit will do, and then you eat it and it doesn't make any difference. You don't feel satiated, you just feel a bit rubbish from having eaten a biscuit. Whereas physical hunger sort of slowly builds, anything will satiate you, you feel satiated, and then, you know, you feel good and off you go. And I think it's therefore more about eating without distraction, without the TV on, without reading, if you know, those kind of things. Think about eating, eat healthy choices, and by that I'm back to that, you know, fruit and vegetables, whole grains, you know, lean protein, fermented food. And most people, if they're eating that, it's not going to be too many calories. And if you're listening and eating when you're hungry, it's not going to be too few either. And I think also just to add that we know that sort of weight is actually quite a complicated topic, in that we used to think that it was just a simple matter of energy in minus energy out. So whatever energy we use for sort of exercise and things equaled our weight. But now we know that actually the microbiota, so those gut bugs again, actually have a really important role in it. And they've done studies in both mice that have been replicated in humans, where they've shown that if you feed a mouse this exactly the same healthy chow diet, and you take some poo from an obese human and put it in to the gut of the mouse, so it's called a fecal transplant, that they gain weight on the same diet. And you can reverse that by taking poo from a lean human and putting it in the gut of another fecal transplant, and they lose weight. So it's not just about what we eat or how much we eat, it's also about what we eat. And so it's just that sort of overall thing, I think, about not focusing on specific food groups or calories or quantities, but listening to your body, eating those healthy foods that are going to help, not just in the short term, but the longer term, about those healthy choices, really.
Definitely. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Harry, I think there was a study that looked at the nutrition. You'll probably know this much better than me with your paediatric history, but the nutrition of children, like the first year of life or first 5 years of life, and how that can really impact their kind of long-term health and wellness. And we know that, you know, young children, especially toddlers, they want whatever mum and dad have got, don't they, or parents or carers have got, you know, whatever that thing is you're eating, they want. So actually setting those examples for them is really important as well. And the postpartum is, I guess, a great time to start adapting those habits.
Yeah, there's lots of really interesting studies on it. You're right. So there's something called the Barker hypothesis, which has looked at babies who are born small for gestational date. So babies that are born small, that if they catch up their weight very quickly, they're actually at increased risk of diabetes and long-term health issues. And that's, we think, probably due to what's called epigenetic signaling. So when you have your DNA and you have the base pairs linked, and you've got your four base pairs and your double helix, that's your DNA, which makes up your chromosomes. We now know that there are switches on the top of those base pairs that switch on and off the genes. And that's called epigenetics. And it's done through adding chemicals on and off, so methylation and unmethylation. And we're only just beginning to really understand that. But it's thought that the in utero environment actually modulates those epigenetic switches. And so if you're small in utero, it sort of puts the baby into this or changes their epigenetics so that they are pre-programmed almost to put on weight much quicker as soon as they have access to more food and are fed outside, you know, when they're born. So it's lots of really, really interesting research coming out about, you know, the importance of nutrition during pregnancy, the importance of nutrition after, the importance of particularly gut health and how that impacts children longer term. So things like if you breastfeed for the first 3 to 4 months, but early wean, so if you're weaning early at around 3 to 4 months, you actually increase long-term risk of asthma, but wheeze and eczema. But if you breastfeed for longer, so if you breastfeed for more than 5 months, that actually protects you from that effect. So we're understanding about the role of breast milk and the role of the formation of the infant microbiota, and how that affects their long-term risk of disease. So there's lots of really new and exciting information, and I think it's really important to share that with women, and also about how the microbiota of your baby actually is different if you formula feed, if you combination feed, if you breastfeed, and even if you have exclusively pumped milk. So it's actually a different microbiota in babies that are exclusively on pumped breast milk as opposed to having it direct transfer from the breast. So there's evidence to suggest that there's a two-way communication between the baby's mouth and the breast, and that modulates the microbiota as well. So we don't know what the long-term meaning of that is yet, but there certainly do appear to be differences, and it'll be really fascinating in years to come to find out what that means, really.
Wow, that's incredible. I didn't know that. That's amazing. And I think definitely gut microbiome and gut health is one of those things where the evidence over the last few years has just kind of kept coming, hasn't it? And it's absolutely fascinating. And the power specific to kind of pregnancy and postpartum on childhood health is amazing. And we're sort of connecting those links up, aren't we? So yeah, I agree. Those kind of longer term studies that we might see over the coming years will be absolutely fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. But it is really difficult to do studies in nutrition and to do them well. And I think that's partly because there are just so many confounders. For example, example, you're trying to sort of unpick if there's any benefit of organic food is really difficult, because most people that eat organic food may well be a bit more health conscious and might go to the gym a bit more and do other things. So to try, it's much harder than, you know, sort of looking at the effects of a drug, say, for example. And the best drug studies are all what's called biomarker led. So you're looking for a specific chemical change, where we don't have that to the same degree in nutrition. And so studies are a lot harder. You need that many thousands of people to unpick those changes. So it's difficult, but I hope that they, you know, we will learn more. And there's certainly lots and lots to learn about the microbiota, and our, you know, our understanding really is in its infancy about that. So it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, definitely. We're just kind of scratching the surface, but already that's fascinating. I love it. So interesting stuff to come for the future, most definitely. I also wonder, Harriet, whether there's any changes to mum's metabolism post-birth. This is another thing that we kind of hear thrown around quite a bit.
So I think that's a really difficult question to answer. Partly, I think I should just sort of clarify a couple of terms. So metabolism is... it describes all the chemical processes that occur in your body in order to keep you alive. So that's how your body converts food and drink into energy. Whereas your basal metabolic rate is the energy required for performing vital body functions at complete rest. So people sort of think metabolism and metabolic rate are the same, I think. And so metabolism is just that breaking down of the food and harnessing the energy from it, whereas the metabolic rate is how much you're using the energy every day. So basal metabolic rate doesn't change hugely. It can be changed by things like starvation. If you increase your exercise, it changes it slightly, and it is slightly changed by estrogen as well. So sort of hormonal process of pregnancy and birth may change it too, but really it's something that we don't really have any control, or very little control over. And I think lots of people think, I'm thinner, or put on a bit of weight because my metabolic rate is slowed down. But actually, people that are heavier actually have a higher metabolic rate, because it requires more energy to move around, and you need more energy. So I think it's less about focusing on that, more about, for me, those healthy changes of eating, and also getting back to, you know, some physical exercise once you're well enough, once you've had your 6-week check or you're recovered from your C-section.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've already started to touch on how powerful nutrition can be. So that kind of partly answers my next question, Harriet. But I just want to talk about how we need to move away from this kind of focus that some women might have, and certainly the media hasn't helped this at all. But why kind of losing weight in the postpartum, or that awful term that we hear, that kind of bounce back, and why that shouldn't be our primary focus when it comes to our nutrition, and why we should be focusing on these other things that we've started to discuss.
I agree. I completely agree. I couldn't have put it better myself. I think there's a huge celebrity and social influencer led culture, and the media, you know, all about the pressure to bounce back. And undoubtedly, I think most women will feel that. But instead, I think it's about you're thinking of your long-term health and your baby's health, and not having quick fixes about going on a crash diet or doing anything like that. But it's about having those healthy choices long term, and that not being a diet, but actually being the way you eat for life. And I think that's a much more sustainable and better for you, better for your baby, better for modeling for your older children. You know, I know lots of people have sort of described it in the same way, but your body's been through an immense series of changes. It will take a while to get back to its normal state. That's completely normal. We're not meant to bounce back. And I think, you know, you've got enough pressure as a newborn, as a mum with a newborn, and, you know, really park that mum guilt. There's loads of mum guilt that needs to be parked for so many topics, and that certainly is one of them. So instead, you know, think about you eating well, eating healthily for long term, because there's loads of evidence suggests that if you go on a crash diet, you actually put more weight back on afterwards. And so I think it's just about, you know, getting back to or keeping up, depends what you, how you coped in pregnancy. For me, I know that I my diet was horrendous, so I only ate Special K because that's all I could eat. So it's about, you know, making those healthy choices that feel like they're a regular part of your routine, that they don't feel like you're restricting food, that you're not cutting out major food groups because it's really difficult to maintain long term, and that you're enjoying lots of variety, lots of healthy food, lots of healthy tasty food, because healthy food doesn't need to be boring, it doesn't need to be tasteless, and you don't need to feel hungry all the time to lose weight. You can you lose weight in a sustainable way where you're not going to put it back on, where you're going to take some time to eat healthily, nourish your body and look after your baby, and do that slowly, and you'll get there. But, you know, it's thinking about I think that long-term approach.
Definitely. And I love what you just said about nourishing your body and looking after your baby, because I do think in the postpartum, really, they need to be our fundamental focuses, not kind of all the other external pressures that we might get, but actually recognizing that incredible life-changing journey that your body has been on and how devoted it has been to other things, and how actually now it's really important that we nourish it back to health. And I think the more we understand the power of postnatal nutrition and try and look at foods, like you said, rather than looking at them in terms of their calorie totals, but actually instead looking at them in terms of the nutritional compounds that they contain and how they're going to support our body, that's so much more of an empowering way to focus on what we're consuming than kind of a numerical value in terms of calories.
Absolutely. And also, I think that there are lots of cultures. So my husband's Turkish, I know that he has this in Turkey, and I spoke to the GP mum, so Stephanie, I know she was saying that they have it in China, and I think Poonam, another GP, she was saying that in India they have the same thing, where you have a sort of, I think it's called confinement. I don't know what the Turkish word is for it, but I think Stephanie was saying that it's confinement in Chinese, where for the first 60 days you're not allowed out of the house, or however many days depending on your culture, that it's all about focusing on the mum and the baby. And I think while, you know, that might be quite strict in some cultures, I think we could probably all do with a bit of benefit from that, you know, that we shouldn't be having the pressure of having a clean, tidy house and welcoming lots of people around and having, you know, food to feed them, that actually it should be looking after the mum and baby and, you know, resting after a really a big deal, either really major surgery or, you know, giving birth is really major too. And I think it's about that. And I think if you can prepare before, so during pregnancy, if you can batch cook anything and get that ready for those, you know, first few weeks, and it will really help you. And also, I know that a few of my friends did a really lovely thing where if someone had a baby, they dropped, you know, a couple of meals off, which I think is a really lovely thing to do for people. And it's actually nicer than giving another baby grow in some ways, because it's really looking after mum and baby. And I think, you know, that can be really easily forgotten.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I think it should be almost an unwritten rule that if you're visiting a new mum, you either do some ironing, yes, or you bring a home cooked meal or fill their freezer with something. And I always encourage mums to kind of, you know, the typical baby shower gift, you know, with the hundreds of grey or yellow baby grows that really realistically are almost disposable at the rate that babies grow. But actually, you know, like a voucher for one of those healthy kind of ready meal, but nutritious ready meal kind of delivery services, or, you know, things like that actually will really, really support mum. Because I think we often forget, don't we? We totally forget about mums, and we can definitely learn something from that kind of staying in, resting, nurturing mum and baby, and letting all of those other mundane tasks be done by friends and family. So accepting help is so important.
Yes, and I think, you know, do accept help, accept any help you can. And instead of cleaning your house or filling, you should be, you know, keeping up with life. Sleep when your baby sleeps, and you know, maybe if you have time or you've got a partner, get them to prepare you some nice healthy snacks so that you've got, you know, like apple slices with nut butter or something, instead of reaching for the nearest biscuit or something. So I think if you've got them ready, you've washed your fruit and vegetables, so you can snack on those, it's much easier to eat healthily and have those things when you're, you know, you're hungry and you've got a baby and they're screaming and you're trying to breastfeed. I think that's one of the things that people find so appealing about a biscuit, is it's quick. where if you've got to go to the fridge and you've got to wash fruit or, you know, prepare it, you just think, oh, just have the biscuit. So wash your fruit, have it ready, cut your carrots up, get your dip ready, and you'll be more likely to choose them than the biscuit.
And also it's one-handed food, isn't it, which with the postpartum is really key. So I mean, you can easily make, you know, it's planning ahead, isn't it, and if you can plan at the end of your pregnancy, even better. But you know, making a little batch of like homemade biscuits that are made from dates and nuts and oats, kind of blended down perhaps with some, you know, nut butter for some good fats and protein, really easy. It doesn't need baking, can just be done in a one-off blender, kept in your fridge for a fairly long time, and again, you've got that quick go-to, but with a big nutrition bonus rather than just sugar that you're going to cause spikes and you'll be starving again in 20 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, I think I'm not normally a fan of smoothies at all, because I think instead of having the fruit or the vegetables blended down where you're destroying some of that fiber, you're much better off having the whole fruit, the whole vegetables, because that's the fiber is intact, and that fiber is really important for your gut health and those microbiota. But actually, I think, you know, if you've just had a baby, a smoothie can be really useful. It's really quick, it's one-handed, you can, you know, pop some kefir yogurt in it, or add some kefir, add some fruit and vegetables, add some chia seeds or flax, you know, get your cut fiber in. Fiber is not just important for that long-term health, but after you've had your baby, eat lots of fiber. It will help you go to the toilet, and that's always, you know, tricky after birth, however the baby's come out. So I think that will really help.
That's a really good point. I think that's probably one of the biggest postpartum fears, isn't it? The first time you need to go for a poo, and definitely a fiber rich and well hydrated diet. I mean, hydration is so important as well, I'm sure you'd agree, but trying to balance that will really, really help make that an easier first postpartum task, I suppose.
Yes.
we've talked a little bit about breastfeeding, Harriet, but I wonder if is there any kind of key considerations we should think about for breastfeeding mothers?
So calcium, the selenium, the iodine, they're specifically for breastfeeding mothers. So certainly those. Otherwise, I don't think you need to be doing anything special other than just making sure you meet those nutrients if you're breastfeeding. And breastfeeding is really important for microbiota development in the baby. And I think just knowing that you're doing a really fantastic job if you're able to breastfeed and doing that. But also that if you aren't, that we know that microbiota formation in the baby probably happens even before birth, and is also dependent on things like if you've got pets, if you've got siblings, how the baby was born as well. So there are multiple factors that are all important.
Amazing. Now, we talked a bit about batch cooking, which I'm a massive fan of, and actually it's on my to-do list over the next couple of months, is to start filling a freezer ready for our postpartum journey. But is there anything else that you would recommend, Harry, or that we can do to try and kind of plan and prepare for an easy and quick but a nourishing kind of postpartum when it comes to our food choices?
So I think meal planning is quicker, it's easier, you're more likely to have healthier food and meals if you've planned them and you've got the food. So I meal plan, I would recommend doing that. And then if you can order your shopping online and you've got a regular shop, so you're not having to go out, traipse around the shops, or, you know, oh my goodness, I've forgotten various things. You've got all the food there, you've planned the meals, and then it's just a matter of the small matter of cooking them. I think if you can get anyone to help with cooking, or that's undoubtedly helpful. And I think if your partner, if you have one, can do the cooking to take the pressure off you, I think that makes a really, really big difference. Or if you're, you know, if you've got parents and all parents that can come out and help, certainly in that initial period. And so I think just doing that, really having those healthy choices in the fridge, you're much more likely to eat healthily, and knowing what sort of healthy means. So back to those things I sort of said before, and having healthy snack ideas, like, you know, whole grain cracker with some cheese, or kefir yogurt, and just those small changes. So going from normal yogurt to kefir, or going from refined carbohydrates to whole grain carbohydrates, will all really help. And all those small changes will add up.
Definitely. I think sometimes snacking can probably be the biggest hurdle, because I think we can get our heads around the idea of making a healthy meal. So, I mean, think like quick things like stir fries. It doesn't have to be, you know, some big Michelin star feast. It can be quick, easy, and fresh food. But actually snacking is quite often, I think, where we can fall down because of that convenience. So certainly planning ahead with that is a really good idea. Harriet, you mentioned kefir a little bit. I wonder if you can just touch on the kind of benefits of that and why it is a good choice for us, especially in the postpartum.
Sure. So fermented foods have got more bugs in them. So they're sort of cultured, and if you think of like a sort of pecking order, so at the top would be those really fermented foods like kefir, and then bio yogurt has some bacteria but far less than kefir, and then at the bottom you just have your standard yogurt, which doesn't have any bacteria in it. So what you're looking for is bacteria that will help you nourish your microbiota. And we know that a good healthy microbiota has got lots of diversity and lots of quantity, so it's about having variety, having different fermented foods, so kefir, and also like raw fermented sauerkraut and kimchi. There's the Korean version of kimchi, of sauerkraut. So they're all the sort of fermented vegetables. They've got quite a sort of umami taste. They're really quite savory. Some people like me love them. They're quite an acquired taste. But if you can try and have a variety, vary the brand, vary the type, you know, vary what you're eating and when, and just think of a lots of sort of variety, I think is a really key word, because the more you change it up and mix it up and have different brands and different versions of things, the more nutrients and the more variety of nutrients, the more variety of bugs you're going to get and going to be exposed to. And you know, we think that's all really beneficial.
So it's kind of like keeping just your gut guessing.
Yes, but also, you know, each one's going to have slightly different bacteria in it and slightly different gut bugs, and that's great. And you can make them at home. You know, kefir is actually really easy to make. You can buy yourself some kefir grains, and they are really, really easy. There's so many YouTube videos on how to make them. It's simple, but there are some really great brands. I particularly like the Year Valley spoonable yogurt. It's really accessible. It doesn't taste disgusting. You're not thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I've got to hold my nose to like swallow it down. It's really delicious. You know, you can have it for breakfast or a really healthy snack with some fruit and some nuts and some seeds. And you know, you're actually helping your gut bugs as well. And I think that's why I really steer clear of thinking about calories, but more about, you know, the nutritious benefit of food.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a headspace that we need to try and push more and more, especially when it comes to the real powerful times of pregnancy and the postpartum. Because as we've kind of scratched the surface on today, really, is how powerful our nutrition can be in our long-term and our child's long-term wellness. And all mums' focus really is on building the healthiest and longevity future for their child. So nutrition can absolutely play a massive role in that, which is brilliant.
Yeah, it really can. And I think if you're sort of go back about postpartum weight loss and things, I think if you're sort of considering, you know, low carb diet and a ketogenic diet, there's so much focus in the media about, you know, Atkins diet and diets like that. It sounds really appealing to lose weight on those diets. But just a sort of a note of caution that ketogenic diets were actually found or sort of devised for children with intractable epilepsy. So that was epilepsy that didn't respond to treatment. And they were really only ever meant to be a very short-term solution. So a maximum of 2 years. They were very tightly controlled. And the fats that were replacing carbohydrate were very tightly controlled, and special types of fats that were replacing it. And it's a long way from the sort of Atkins diet of cut out your carbs, have lots of sausages and cheese and bacon. And there's actually been really good quality evidence with lots of people over a long period of time, really good study that actually found that if you cut out carbohydrates and you replace it with animal fats and proteins, that it actually increases your long-term risk of all-cause mortality and morbidity, so things like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer. And if you cut out carbohydrates but replace it with with plant-based fats and proteins, you actually have the reverse effect. So it actually decreases your risk of morbidity and mortality. So I think it's about, it's really about looking after your body, trying to avoid cutting those big food groups out and following the latest dietary trend. Because there's so much more, you know, to those things. And it's often the sort of the sexy headline of I lost, you know, 20 kilos on the Atkins and I ate a great diet of, you know, bacon and cheese and it was delicious, that, you know, you just don't see the real evidence and what harm it might actually be doing. So I think keep back to that same focus of, you know, really healthy diet for your long term without cutting lots of food groups out, without cutting out the variety, the interest or the taste.
Definitely. Because also a diet that cuts out a major food group also sounds very miserable.
And it's really hard to maintain long term, which is why most people don't, you know, carry on with the, you know, keto diet or, yeah, you know, a low carb diet for very long.
Because we want to be able to enjoy what we're eating as well, right? Food is a massive emotive thing, and it's important that we get that balance. And we can, I mean, healthy food can be absolutely delicious. I'm a massive fan of it, and it's experimenting so that you actually find what is nourishing your body and that what you enjoy as well. Getting that balance is key.
Yeah, absolutely. I think food, you know, is the massive part of our cultural, cultural way of life and society and enjoyment. And food isn't just about nutrients, it is about enjoying it. And I think, you know, that's about having a piece of birthday cake on your birthday and taking a pragmatic approach, but eating lots of delicious healthy food so you don't feel you are restricted in any way.
Absolutely, I love that. So Harriet, I wonder if you could share three of your top tips with us about kind of nutrition in the postpartum. I apologize for putting you on the spot, but I always like to try and round us up with three of those kind of real take home top tips to share with either new or expectant mums.
That's fine. I think my first one would be get those nutrients in if you're breastfeeding, the extra calcium, selenium and iodine. My next one is, I think that, you know, there is overwhelming evidence to support the benefits of breastfeeding, and if you can breastfeed, I think that's going to help your long-term health, lowering your risk of diabetes and cancer, breast cancer, and also, you know, helping your baby. And then I think it's just eating those, prepare as much as you can, get as much help and have a happy, healthy, varied diet that you can sustain for life and without pressure to bounce back and, you know, be a model, modelling your size 8 clothes straight away.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Avoid that social pressure. And actually, I think sometimes you almost in that postpartum need to do a little bit of a selective cull. So if you are someone that ends up on social media looking at all of these, you know, 2 week postnatal models that look like they're about to walk down the catwalk, then perhaps is a time just to remove that from what you're looking and maybe unfollow some of these people. They're not going to be offended or even know, but it's important that we protect our minds when we're sleep deprived and hormonal and things like that as well.
Yes, absolutely. And if you're breastfeeding or you're feeding your baby, you know, however you're feeding, and you're up at 4 a.m. and you're looking at these things, I think it's a lot easier to be triggered or affected by them. So I agree. I think a social cull, it gets some real mums who are, you know, speaking the truth and are not, you know, Instagram, I think so much is fake on Instagram. It's about, you know, finding some mums, finding an NCT group or some local mums who are all going through the same shared experiences and, you know, and just thinking about your long-term health, no quick fixes.
Yeah, keeping it real, isn't it? Harriet, thank you so much. I'm really grateful for your time and for sharing your expertise and knowledge with us. And I will, as I said, link all of your books and also your website to those brilliant little micronutrients infographics as well in the description. So please, mums, feel free to check those out for lots more brilliant information. And thank you, Harriet, for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you found it helpful, then please hit subscribe and leave a review. It really does make a huge difference to the number of women I can reach out to and empower with this information. For more daily free information, inspiration, or details on my bespoke antenatal education courses or your pregnancy journey course, then head over to my website, www.midwifepip.com, And check out my Instagram page at midwife_pip. Thank you and see you next time.